It's the Rick Emerson radio program. 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming along. Coming up later, CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop. Later on as well, we have Dennis Pitzenbarger and Scotty J. At the Ministry of Truth, ladies and gentlemen, it is
time for Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
The cops think the Hillsboro rabbit hoarder is back up to her old tricks again. Yes, a woman accused of mistreating 150 rabbits in her home now stands accused of stealing those bunnies back.
I never even knew they were crazy rabbit people.
Mm-hmm. Miriam Sikowitz, apparently...
Sikowitz, really? Mm-hmm.
Yep,
fantastic.
Abandoned a Hillsboro home and moved to Chehalis, Washington. Where they eventually found the stolen rabbits and arrested her. On Monday.
Jesus.
Inside the Sikowitz van, there were rabbit cages, rabbit food. None of the rabbits she had with her. Police tracking Sikowitz says she came from a ranch where investigators also found 80 more rabbits. A phone call from a concerned hotel clerk initially led police to a motel in Chehalis.
Where did she leave from?
Hillsboro.
Why would you... I'm just saying. The suburbs are what the suburbs are, and Hillsboro is what Hillsboro is. Why would you move to Chehalis?
Well, apparently, you can have rabbits there without raising suspicion.
And
but not this time.
Multiple wives.
A phone call from the concerned hotel clerk in Chehalis led police to her. Apparently, they're worried about the way she spoke lovingly about rabbits. Looked up her case on the internet and called police.
There's some sort of Steinbeck joke here.
Now,
I don't...
On January 14th, volunteers found a lock and chain-link enclosure cut. 140 of her bunnies were gone. Well, suspicion immediately fell to her. In her mind, there are her rabbits. She's very obsessed with them.
What's her first name?
Miriam.
See, there's some sort of tell me about the rabbits, Miriam. Or I don't know. There's some of mice and men thing there, but I just...
It's a sad case of hoarding. I think we have some mental issue attached to this.
Okay. And it's rabbit hoarding.
Yep.
Okay.
So she stole the bunnies back.
She's taking it back.
All right. Okay. And
allegedly.
No.
These are allegations.
No, she did it.
We know she did it.
Okay, your name's on the show, not mine.
No, I'm saying, in my opinion,
yes.
Allegedly,
yes.
Come on. I mean, seriously, she's the crazy rabbit lady. I mean, how would you possibly mix her up with? What case of mistaken identity could there possibly be?
Is there a second rabbit lady around?
That's what I'm saying.
I must know.
Exactly. Who else would steal 140 rabbits?
Who else would... Really, that's what I'm doing. Who else would you confuse her with? And why... You know, my wife and I were just having this conversation this weekend.
About the rabbit lady?
No, not about the rabbit lady, but we were talking about the crazy cat lady, and I have several thoughts on that, and I will give them now in no particular order to the joy of the audience. A... You know, that crazy cat lady is a term you didn't hear 10 years ago. You sort of knew that the phenomena existed, but people didn't really talk about it.
There
now,
are more of them.
Women
don't want to get married anymore. They'd rather have cats than men.
You say crazy cat lady now, and everybody knows who you're talking about. It just became a social... So the crazy cat lady is a type. That is a
no
social type.
No longer a minority.
And note that there's no crazy dog guy, by the way. There is no crazy dog man.
They even have a crazy cat lady action figure.
I've seen that. I saw that at a comic book store.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah. And she's got the big, crazy eyes and like the kooky hair.
And the robe.
Yeah, no, there is no crazy dog man. There is the crazy cat lady, though. Everybody knows her. Everybody knows who she is. There's one on every block. Everybody knows exactly what I'm talking about.
I know one that even eats cat food.
And that...
Yeah.
By choice?
Oh, yeah.
See,
I bet it's Sheba, though.
I don't understand...
Only the best.
Yes.
It's part of George Bush's morning in America. I don't understand this is one step away from like becoming a bad stand-up comedy routine, so I hesitate to even talk about it, but I really don't understand the relationship between women and cats. I don't, because it's just...
Was this a discussion you had last night with your...
A little bit.
Therapist?
Well, no. Yes.
Tell me about the cats! For the love of God! And the rabbit hoarder.
Cats hate you anyway.
That's the thing is, it's a relationship based on abuse. If any other animal treated you the way a cat treated you, you'd have it taken away and made into a coat somewhere. What's this? Well, it's a dog. It randomly bites me and takes out pieces of my flesh, but he means well. A cat, you know, how many times you go over to a cat lover's house? What, you know, big gash on the neck. What's up with you? A cat attacked me the other day. You know, if you had any other animal that just randomly tried to hurt you, you'd be, like, you get one, you know that cat, they have one bite at the apple, and then that animal's out of the house. Cats, people keep cats. Cats are like the Ike Turner of the animal world. People keep, you know, he loves me, now he only hits me to prove that he loves me. I mean, why would people keep an animal that actively dislikes you and would kill you, given the chance, would kill you slowly and painfully if only you were smaller, it were bigger, or you were incapacitated?
Oh, my cat attacked my little brother constantly in the middle of the night.
Oh, this is awkward. I didn't know you were
no,
a cat
No,
person.
No, I'm not. I left her with my mother when I moved out.
That's what I'm saying. You don't miss the cat either, do you?
I think the finger should be pointed at the cat lobby.
Yeah. Is there a cat lobby?
I'm sure there is in Washington, yes.
There probably is. And it's probably a cat. You can probably just smell the poly grip from miles away.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, in any event. So there you go. There's my cat musing for the day. Well, a woman says she was robbed by two boys who appeared to be 7 and 10 years old and used a gun to take her purse. This happened in Seattle. She said one of the boys was only 3 feet tall, the other 4 feet tall. She said the younger boy displayed a handgun and said, "Give me your purse, bitch." And the older boy grabbed the purse, and they both ran away.
The end. That's the urban perspective. That's the Seattle perspective right now, there.
This woman could use a bunny. It might make her feel a little bit better.
Or she can make a new purse out of it.
Oh. Pets or meat. Pets or meat is a Roger and Me joke. I always wonder if anybody gets that.
That goes back a while.
That's a Michael Moore joke. So, yes, the... No. That's the... where was that?
Somewhere Seattle.
Urban sprawl, Seattle, yeah.
The fish-throwing capital there.
No, it's... Well, and it's Seattle... I mean, look, here's the thing about Seattle is at least...
Why'd you see the fish being thrown? What else is there? Find the exit, get out, go. There's nothing else there.
That and the guy playing a saw. That's it, pretty much. That's really what you go to Seattle for. There's no that, you know, I mean, in Seattle, you can at least say, like, well, we're not in Tacoma. And if you're in Tacoma, you can say, well, we're not in SeaTac. And if you're in SeaTac, you can go, well, we're not in Chehalis. And if you're in Chehalis, you're hanging out with the crazy bunny woman. And there you go.
Not That's anymore. They kicked her out of town.
The alleged crazy bunny woman.
Right.
We know it's true.
I didn't say so.
No, I did. Just saying what we're all thinking. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, how do you bribe at-risk children?
You
give them pizza. That's what the police are doing. Yes, they're putting children and police together, adding a favorite food and creating friends. Pizza, police, and kids were the lunchtime combo at the Clarendon Elementary School in North Portland.
The Clarendon Elementary School?
Clarendon.
Oh.
Yeah. It's supported by various businesses and the police union. The officers shared up slices and built bridges of progress.
Are you reading a press release as news?
I don't know who wrote this.
Where is it from?
This is, from our friends down in the basement.
From Coin? Oh, then you are reading a press release as news.
Well, I'm kind of
Who do they have to rewrite it? I mean, really, who's left down there to write?
I fired everyone.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't know if I've never been down there.
No, there's no one there to see.
Oh.
There's some hard drives spitting these things.
Well, they took 67 pizzas and fed 400 Clarendon students. This will stop crime.
I don't even know where Clarendon is.
By making them fat.
Yeah, seriously, there were two of them.
they can't run as fast as they used to.
Where is Clarendon?
North Portland.
Ah, okay. Well, I don't know where anything is. There's my attempt at being relatable.
Well, all it's right. Becoming a nice neighborhood.
Well, okay. And by nice, you mean?
Nice? They're fixing
I don't even know what area we're talking about.
Do you know where the yellow line runs?
I do. Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
North
I know
Portland.
That. Okay. I just didn't know. Clarendon. All right. Anyway, so the cops went.
Well, let's see you visit the kids there and serve them pizza.
Well, that's not going to happen. It's not going to say that's. In no way is that going to happen. I don't visit children anywhere. No, this is one of those things that always works really well when kids. How old are these kids?
Well, elementary school.
Yeah, well, that's. Well, of course. It's easy to convince. It's easy to lie to yourself and tell yourself that these community outreach programs are going to keep little bastards from robbing you when they turn 18. That's not true, though. That's a lie.
They're starting to rob people when they're 7 and 9 years old.
That's what I'm saying. They can't. Their feet don't even reach the pedals. Of course they can't be out killing anybody. But I mean, either that. Look, I mean, seriously, as soon as it's 17, 18, it's just sharpened screwdrivers. That's what we're talking about. I remember the cops would come to my high school, and they would do a lot of, and I was right there at the beginning of the D.A.R.E. program, and the cops would come to the school, and they would do a lot of don't smoke, don't have sex, don't do drugs, don't whatever. And, of course, we would just mindlessly, all right, and just, whatever, can I have the candy now? And then they would just, we just wanted to get our hands on the D.A.R.E. coloring book. We just nodded blindly to whatever it is they were saying. As soon as you turn 16, you're just in the basement huffing paint thinner, plotting drive-bys. It's what children do. It's all part of the American cultural tapestry. Little bastards.
So give up, you do-gooders.
Yes, it's not going to help.
Don't even try.
You're doomed. Okay, therapy for everyone, then. Here's Tim Riley.
All righty. The nominations are out for the 79th Annual Academy Awards. Actress Selma Hayek announces the Best Picture nominees.
The films nominated for Best Picture of 2006 are Babel, The Departed, Letters from Iwo Jima, Little Miss Sunshine, and The Queen.
What was the first one she said?
Babel.
Is that what
the films said? Nominated for Best Picture of 2006 are Babel, The Departed, Letters from Iwo Jima, Little Miss Sunshine, and The Queen.
I believe that is Babel. Okay. All right. I don't think that's an accent problem either. I think her mouth just didn't work there for a second. Okay. I've seen one of those films. I have no idea what Babel even is. It's that thing with Brad Pitt, right?
Oh, is that the one with the picture of him crying on the payphone?
I think so, where he's looking all, he looks all sweaty.
Mm-hmm.
So there's Babel. Wait.
The films nominated for Best Picture of 2006 are Babel.
No.
The Departed.
Yes.
Letters from Iwo Jima.
No.
Little Miss Sunshine.
No.
And The Queen.
No. Little Miss Sunshine, which I've been told by numerous people I gotta see. I have a whole bunch of people who told me it's like the best movie in the history of everything, so I gotta...
I think The Queen is, for this year.
Now, The Queen is playing with Borat at, what is that, that theater on Hawthorne on like 21st, like the magic...
I think it's on mainstream now. I think it's the in Queen. The suburbs as well.
Yeah.
So, I saw it downtown at that arty place.
The only thing I've seen is, I mean, and everybody knows that Departed is gonna win. That's it. And it doesn't deserve to win, but it will, and he doesn't deserve to win for Best Director this year, but he will, and DiCaprio doesn't deserve to win for Best Actor this year, but he will, and just because it's one of those, it's kind of like how you know what it is, it's like when you wake up and, I don't know, you realize that you've been a real, like, not that this has ever happened to me, but you wake up and you realize that you've spent the last few weeks being like a real jerk to your significant other, and you're like, I'm going to be really nice for the next 4 days, you're cleaning the house, you're buying baubles, you're taking her out to dinner. Why? I've been a cretin for the last month. Theoretically speaking, that's what the Academy Award, that's what the Oscar people are going to do, because they're going to realize, we've never given anything to Martin Scorsese. We're a-holes. And then so the Departed, which is not like that great of a film, is going to win everything this year.
It'll be a shame.
Yes.
Actress Selma Hayek announces the Best Actor.
The nominees for Best Performance by an Actor in a Leading Role are Leonardo DiCaprio in Blood Diamond, Ryan Gosling in Half Nelson, Peter O'Toole in Venus, Will Smith in The Pursuit of Happiness.
Sounds like a fake accent.
And Forrest Whitaker in The Last King of Scotland.
Okay, I'm sorry. That accent doesn't even sound real.
It is real.
I know it is. I know it is real. But you know how sometimes even real accents don't sound
real.
I'm sorry. And I can't. And goddamn Aaron has tainted me forever on this because, you know, I've got my, like all men, I have a fixation on Selma Hayek, and, this is catching now, I can't talk. But Aaron made that observation, it's a long story, but Aaron, the geek in the city, he made this observation that he can no longer find Selma Hayek attractive because he saw a photograph of her taken at such an angle where he realized that she looks a lot like his mom. And so, ooh. That retroactively, like, ruins that. I mean, that'll screw with you retrospectively, too, because then you have a whole bunch of fantasies that you can never go back to. And so Selma Hayek is ruined for him. And so now when I think of Selma Hayek, then I, in turn, kind of, there's like the shadow of Aaron's mom kind of lurking behind her. And that's all awkward for me, too. So
the less said about that, the better.
Here's
the president of the Academy, Sid Gannis, announcing the Best Actress nominees.
For Best Performance by an Actress in a Leading Role, the nominees are Penelope Cruz in Bolvar, Judi Dench in Notes on a Scandal, Helen Mirren in The Queen, Meryl Streep in The Devil Wears Prada, and Kate Winslet in Little Children.
How sad that the only movie I've seen out of all of those is The Devil Wears Prada. I don't even deserve to live. I had to be taken out back and beaten to death with a shovel. Moving on.
Well, the president of the Academy, Sid Gannis, is back again announcing the Best Director nominees.
In the category of Best Achievement in Directing, Alejandro González Iñárritu for Babel, Martin Scorsese for The Departed, Clint Eastwood for Letters from Iwo Jima, Stephen Frears for The Queen, and Paul Greengrass for United 93.
And then there's that, the United 93... That's weird, isn't that? Wasn't that one of those 9/11 films?
Yeah, there's a whole barrel of those out there. I haven't seen one of them.
They're already in there. Why would you? I mean, really.
Is that entertainment? Escapism?
No.
Happiness? What are you supposed to be
I'd like to forget my troubles for a day. I'd like one ticket to United 93, please. I'm feeling a little down about things, and I'd like a pick-me-up. Like just going and having somebody kick you in the sack for 2 hours. And paying. There's no reason for that. I went to, where the hell was I the other day? Was it to a store? There's like, I swear to God, and I know this sounds crass, but I swear to God, there was like a cutout bin of nothing but 9/11 films. It was like the notch on the side where they were all like $1.99.
With a heart for Valentine's Day with an arrow going through it?
No.
No.
Okay. No, in no way. In no
you
way.
You ever see it? You know it's coming. Maybe not this year.
In no way was that the case. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, I think they realize.
Well, America being the country it is.
I think they realize it is perhaps too soon. It is perhaps not something we want to view as you said, escapism entertainment at this point. But that what is it, that Letters from Iwo Jima? And Clint Eastwood didn't put out like 3 films in like a month this year because there was.
He's trying to be George Clooney.
Well, but see, and that he's trying to be 2 things. He's trying to be George Clooney. He's trying to be a combination of George Clooney and Tom Brokaw with that Greatest Generation.
Clooncraw.
Because he put out. Clooncraw. Sounds like either some sort of really terrible euphemism for a delicate section of the body, or like, or maybe
it's
some.
What I'm coming down with from being in this room.
Sounds like a pastry.
I was going to say that. I was going to say that it sounded like some sort of southern delicacy. Like, you all come by my place later, you get some clooncraw.
Like deep fried Twinkies or something.
Exactly, totally. But like a thing that they serve you on the bayou.
Well, right now, that'd be deep fried roof shingles.
But the Eastwood put out Letters from Iwo Jima, and then he put out that Flags of Our Fathers movie.
Yeah.
Which I didn't see either.
I'm not in the mood for World War II this year. Lots of times, that's my favorite war, except for this year for some reason.
you're taking a year off World War II.
I hate it.
This year is all about Grenada to me. This is the year of Grenada. All right, here's this year. Next year, it's going to be all Falkland Islands.
Do you plan those ahead?
I do, yeah.
The president of the Academy, Sid Gannis, announces the best animated film nominees.
Sid Gannis totally sounds like a guy who'd be on a 50s detective
film. For animated feature film, the nominees are Cars, John Lasseter, Happy Feet, George Miller, and Monster House, Gil Keenan.
Boy, why do we other companies must just hate Pixar with a fiery passion? Why would you even bother putting a film out if Pixar's putting something out this year? There's just no point. And I thought Cars came out like 2 years ago. But there's the. Hey, let me. And just as a side note, before we.
Is that the last Academy Award cut?
It is, yes. So let me just say this. You know, a thing that irritates me is the fact that animated films get shoved into this ghetto of having their own Academy Award, which is ridiculous.
Well, it's a different dinner.
Well, I'm just saying.
They don't get to go to the good hotel. That's at the Holiday Inn.
They're at the Ramada. Yeah. They're at the Motel 6.
The party's held in Flirt.
Yeah. Right below. Right below, like, and Puppet Show and Spinal Tap. Because that's one of the. In ceremonies earlier this evening. And then, like, they show the guy at home going, what? And then he's like, there's a TV tray in front of him with the Academy. Where he goes, I just want to. And gone. And then back to the, you know, and there's no time to do anything. Rick, please not to be isolating Tim Riley saying, give me your purse, bitch. Guaranteed goodness every time. Scotty, you know what has to be done. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, all righty. It's time for the Bush Watch. It'll be one of those little green buttons.
Here's your Bush Watch for Tuesday.
President, resident, kind of in charge. We've got the whole country saying, that's my Bush. Life is hard, that's the price of fame. When you're president, everyone knows your name. Hey, what's that thing? It's my Bush. I can't believe he's actually in the White House.
That's on my own.
That's my Bush.
That the president's approval ratings are now the lowest for any president since Richard Nixon in 1974.
I heard that on Stephanie Miller this morning.
Yeah, but it's still not as low. The thing is,
well, we have to go lower then.
They're as low. It's like a reverse tote board. We ought to start giving away like the coffee cups and the tote bags and things if we can get it lower. The thing about George Bush's approval rating is they say it's as low as Nixon. It's as low as Nixon's, but it's like still not as low as you think it would be. That's the funny thing, is it's still in the upper 30s, isn't it?
Yep.
What is it now?
Well, 33.
Yeah. CBS was reporting 28 at one point.
Really?
Yeah.
Let's go with that. We work here.
Scotty typing on screen. Oh, please, I want to vomit. So, no, we'll go. Yeah,
well, that's right. This is Scotty's president, isn't
it?
He's the president of the suburbs.
We'll fix your little red wagon here in a while. All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So, 71% of Americans said the country is on the wrong track, up from 46% in April of 2003, the month after the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq. A majority of those polled this month don't approve of how the president is handling the war, terrorism, or the economy. Tony Snow said Bush's State of the Union speech will focus on issues including the Iraq War, energy independence, health care, immigration, and education.
Uh-huh. He is the education president.
Oh, he is, isn't he?
No, he is. Lisa Gutter kind of ran all that down earlier. He's going to be talking. I mean, what is there really to say about any of that stuff, though? Especially the Iraq War. I'm surprised. You really got to admire the guy. I mean, it's either that he's just got stones like avocados, or there's just an echo inside that.
Modern day Mussolini.
That was Tim Riley who said that. For anyone who might be listening. For anyone out there in any position of authority, perhaps armed with some sort of a microphone in one's wrist that you speak into while preparing to put someone in a 4-point hold.
I ride on public transportation. others will be hurt.
I'm just saying. And when he says others will be hurt, that's not
a threat. I'm always in the middle of large crowds.
These all sound like threats, Tim. Perhaps you should clarify right now that you're not threatening anyone.
I'm not. No, I'm saying I enjoy being accompanied by large groups of people.
He has a random entourage at all times.
He's saying if they come to take you down, they're going to have to take others down with you.
Well, innocent people would be hurt.
Okay, we're back to the threatening.
No, I'm just saying.
Yes?
Perhaps we should have pushed that little red button about 2 minutes ago. Oh, I was talking about somebody else.
Fantastic. I'm just saying, like, I mean, Bush has either got, he's either just got, like, huge sack, or inside of his head is just empty like an Intel clean room, or possibly both. I don't know. Because that's it, man. It's like, how can you possibly, and of course, I am in no way saying that George W. Bush is I mean, we know that he's an alcoholic. The question is whether or not he's still a dry alcoholic. He says that he is. He says he is refrained from continuing to drink. I'm not saying that George W. Bush is constantly clouded by drugs and alcohol when he speaks. All I'm saying is I can't imagine how do you get up in front of a camera and just say that without like cracking a smile? You think at some point he would just lose his composure from having to say that? You know, whatever. Doesn't matter. All right, there you go. There's your
Bush Watch.
There's your Bush Watch for Tuesday on the Rick Emerson Radio
president,
program.
Resident, kind of in charge. He's got the whole country saying, "Pat my bird."
Here's Tim Riley.
I don't know if we brought this up before, but there's new media jargon out there.
Does it have to do with you killing anybody?
No, it does not. No. It has to do...
I'll take hundreds down with me.
I've heard this term 3 times in the past 24 hours from different news organizations, and it is now billary.
Oh, no. See, we were talking about this yesterday. That Scotty was claiming he had coined that phrase yesterday.
No.
Unless
Anderson Cooper is listening to Scotty.
Well, why wouldn't he? All right, so what do we have here?
Well, we have Senator Hillary Clinton saying, it's about time you get to know the way she really is.
I may be the most famous person you really don't know. And at the end of getting to know me, draw your own conclusion. Don't draw it from what you hear somebody say on, you know, radio or cable TV. Draw your own conclusion.
No, there'll be plenty of time to meet the real her as soon as she takes office, and then they open the re-education camps. You know that's the thing, man. She's going to get behind the desk, and there's just going to be bars put up around the entire country, and she's just going to walk through the streets with a flogger, you know, up to her ankles in the blood of dissidents. You know that's exactly... I mean, I say with respect, I'm just saying... Yeah, I'm saying you know that there's some opposition that they're going to have to be imprisoned when that woman takes power.
And she reminds us that Bill Clinton is a tremendous asset because of his time in the White House and his current position.
He's also now extremely involved in activities around the world through his foundation. And through that, he understands what America has to do to regain our leadership and the respect of the world so that we can make better decisions.
So quit mocking him.
Seriously. And you know, Bill is just at home. He's just sitting there, feet up on the desk, brandy snifter. Is it the cigar lit up? Just because he knows. He must just be able to smell it. I mean, that's the thing about Clinton. You know, because that guy is so politically savvy. And together, I don't care what anybody says about it. Even if you disagree with them or you think that the politics are effed, whatever, it doesn't matter. I'm just saying, in terms of pure political savvy and in terms of pure political dynamism and ability, I mean, maybe the greatest political partnership of the 20th century. Because she clearly is all, she's the, I was going to say gristle, and that sounds unpleasant, but I was going to say she's the sort of meat in that family. She's the, you know, she's clearly the one who's tough when toughness is needed, and she's the one who's the engine driving forward, and he's just the guy that can sell it, man. I mean, he really is, as I said yesterday, he is the spoonful of sugar that makes all of that go down. And he must just be sitting at home with just a huge smile on his face because he can probably sense that it's within his grasp to effectively be a third-term president again. I mean, I can't...
Or what? Give the Bushes a little break so they can reinvent Jeb him more palatable.
Can you imagine?
That's what's going to happen, really.
Can you imagine?
We don't have a choice in any of this stuff. It's already been determined.
Oh, I know. But I mean, the smile on his face when he gets into the Oval Office for the third time. I mean, it's just, and more importantly, can you imagine the look of unimaginable horror and despair on the faces of my in-laws? Because that's how I judge all political elections. Mm-hmm. All political campaigns are judged by what they will do to my in-laws. And this one, really, this might actually cause embolisms. And that's, I mean, I'm just saying, it's man, it's a good time to be in America. It really is.
Well, he can't wait to get back online.
Oh, it's fantastic. All right. Well, we should break here. It's 503-733-2970. Back after this, more of Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. Later on, Jim Roop, Scotty J, etc. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Show. Hello there. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Tim Riley rejoins us in mere seconds from the Ministry of Truth. Later on, Jim Roop from Los Angeles talking about the Academy Awards. Scotty J with a Suburban Perspective. Top five sickness songs in light of Sarah Dillon's illness today. What else? That's pretty much it. Rick, I am looking for a woman to smack me around. Please be letting me know the name of your old therapist, Jeff. No, I think she only smacks couples around. I don't think she does singles anymore. Let's see. Rick, sack up, this email says. You bastards, we get sick. It lasts a relatively short time. Just relax and it'll go away. Grow a pair and quit bitching, you goddamn whiners. I'm not whining. I'm right here.
He's not the one who's sick.
I'm not the one who's sick either. So get off my back. Let's see. Rick, about Sudafed. Not only is it prescription, it's a scheduled narcotic now. Enjoy. See, in a way, though, that's almost the government stamp of approval because then you know it's fun as a recreational drug. Not that you should do that. That would be wrong. It is wrong to violate the law simply to achieve a state of chemically ecstatic bliss. That's not something you should do. And your body is the temple of Jesus, and you should treat it as such. I'm simply saying, you know what it is? It's like how women are attracted to guys who have wedding rings on. Like, you know, you see a guy with a wedding ring, women are more attracted to him because it's sort of like an inspected by USDA 5 kind of a stamp. Like somebody else has already checked it out, said the goods are sale-worthy. And so I'm like, well, somebody approved of him. Fantastic. My work is done. He is more desirable to be now. That's what it is with drugs. When the government makes something illegal, it's almost like a tip-off that the thing is fantastic and feels really great and works. So, you know, but Don't do drugs. Here's Tim Riley.
Time for the Religious Nutcase Watch.
Here's your Religious Nutcase Watch for Tuesday, right here on the Rick Emerson Radio program. I believe it's called God Watch system. Yeah, God Watch. I think we originally called it that.
There we go.
Yeah, here's your Religious Nutcase Watch for Tuesday.
double today. First, Tom Cruise is the new Christ of Scientology, according to the leader of that cult-like religion. The Mission Impossible star has been told he has been chosen to spread the word of his faith throughout the world. And leader David Miscavige believes that in the future, Cruise will be worshipped like Jesus for his work to raise awareness of the religion. A source close to the actor, who has risen to one of the church's highest levels, said Tom has been told he's Scientology's Christ-like figure. Like Christ, he's been criticized for his views, but future generations will realize he was
really?
Right.
Are you really reading an article that is saying Tom Cruise, like Christ?
Right. He joined the Church of Scientology in the 80s. A leader, Ron Hubbard, claimed humans bear traces of an ancient alien civilization.
Well, really, let's be honest. How much crazier is that than any of the other stuff that's out there? I mean, really, it's like when that guy calls up and he goes, "Are you, is that Kwanzaa made up holiday?" You know, they're all made up holidays. So, you know, really, it's just, it's, you know what it is? It's just new crazy versus old crazy. And I mean, you know.
Well, it's like the names for those new tramway stations that nobody's going to understand. People speaking the Tualatin language? How many Tualatin language speakers do we have here? I don't think so. Go enroll at the Burlett School of Tualatin Languages.
It's exactly like that. Anyway, I have nowhere to go with this. No, I was just going to say blah, 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 old crazy, blah, 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 new crazy. The only thing I'm really glad of here is that I look back now at Tom Cruise's storied film career, and I'm just sort of thinking back in the movies he's done, the things he became famous in, and I'm just glad that he's not in anything I really, really like, because it would be difficult.
Like, risky business.
Yeah, but I guess the films that Tom Cruise has made that I sort of enjoy the most are the ones that I also don't take very seriously, so it doesn't matter if he's gone all kooky. Like a Top Gun.
That's the 80s.
Well, I'm just saying, like, how can you... Totally. Like, how can you possibly take Top Gun series... I'll be your wingman anytime. You know, it's like, how can you take that seriously to begin with? One cannot. So, therefore, it cannot be ruined. But sometimes it can be a little disconcerting. Like, do you ever go back and watch those Naked Gun movies and O.J. Simpson is throughout them? Was it the Towering Inferno that O.J. Simpson is in? It's difficult to watch O.J. Simpson act in a film now. It's just a little... It does take one out of the motion picture experience. So I just go back and I'm just really glad that, you know, because he worked with Cameron Crowe, but he was on a movie I don't really care about. So, you know, so he was in Vanilla Sky, big effing deal, doesn't matter. You know, if they put him in Almost Famous or something, then that would be... I would have to sit down and have a serious conversation with myself. So, blah, 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 Tom Cruise, crazy, blah, 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 irrelevant, blah, 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 mediocre movies, blah, blah, don't care.
Part two. Much has been made of America's so-called religious divide, but few of the discussions and debates resemble Alexandra Pelosi's new film, Friends of God.
She is the daughter, I think, of Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, how do you like that?
I know they're related in some way, but she's the daughter, and she made this movie about evangelicals.
Well, this HBO documentary shows the Reverend Ted Haggard, the former president of the National Association of Evangelicals, talking frankly about how evangelical Christians have more sex than any other religious group. How do you know this?
Does he specify with who?
I don't know. He resigned from the church, of course, in 2006 after a scandal linking him to drugs and a male gay prostitute.
Well, of course, it's easy to have lots of sex when you're up all night in some meth-induced bender.
Mm-hmm. With a phony identity.
I mean, not that you should do that.
Haggard served as Pelosi's tour guide through the evangelical community. What would that be? Like back alleys and whatnot?
Is there bathhouses? Seriously.
And smoke pouring out of sewers? And red light? People disappearing into the shadows?
This is a glory hole.
I'm just trying to find out what this evangelical community is like at night that he's going to. Is there like a sign in an alley, evangelical community? This is why it's kind of behind the dumpster.
Just a lot of truck stops and parks. Fantastic.
Well, in the documentary, Haggard asks an evangelical next to him how often he has sex with his wife. The man replies, every day. Haggard then explains that evangelicals have a lot of love and says to Pelosi... you don't think these babies came out of nowhere.
Okay. So there you go. There, it's like the Liverpool tour, you know? Mm. It's the Ted Haggard tour. Mm. All right.
That is your religious nutcase watch.
Fantastic. There you go. There's your religious nutcase watch for... sister seeks fulfilling sex life. Bears, okay. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, as soon as his parents stop pouring him out to the talk shows, Sean Horbeck and his family will get a new home. You remember, that was kid was kidnapped, he was found, he came home. But he hasn't been home yet, he's just making the talk show rounds to get his life back to normal. Well, Sean Hornbeck's aunt, Sherry, says Sean is looking forward to the move.
It's really overwhelming for him, but when he found out how much the community wanted to do for him and his family, he's actually getting pretty excited about being able to start helping in the process.
So their existing home will be removed and a new home built within 90 days.
I don't understand.
They're getting a new home.
From?
The public.
What does that mean? From who?
The townspeople. They've all gotten together.
From folks?
From
Are they going to do like a witness-style barn
like
raising?
A barn raising.
Yeah. Okay.
That's exactly what this is.
Is that when he's not the... When he's
well,
not...
they think everything will be the good and back to normal if he lives in a new house.
Of course. If you put him on Oprah as much as possible and then hide him in a closet somewhere and never let him see the public again. That's the Elizabeth Smart cure. Yeah.
So Aunt Sherry says Sean is happy about the donation.
He actually just said that it will help them start some new memory and what he's missed over the last 4.5 years. He's hoping this will bring a smile to his mom and his dad's face, and along with his two sisters.
He's hoping none of these things.
Well, these are carefully written statements.
That kid doesn't know where he is. He doesn't know what year this
is. He could care less where he is.
He doesn't remember his own name at this point. I saw, and I'm not trying to disparage the kid. No. I'm just saying... I saw not an interview with him, but there's an article about him where they said, like, so, how did you feel being kidnapped by the creepy pizza guy for 5 years? And he actually said some variation on the phrase, well, I was relatively happy. I mean,
he didn't have to go to school or do things as regular kids do, and no kid wants to be a kid.
It's true. It is sort of it. That part at the end where he turned into a donkey was unpleasant, though. Sean Hornbeck has gone. He's gone away. I don't know who that kid is that they have now. But that kid now has you know, it's just no track. There's no traction on his brain at all. That kid is a blank. And you can tell when you there's like, you know, those Oprah clips where he just sort of talks like this and is really happy and inflects everything upward at the end and constantly has to mention how he's a very Christian family.
I wonder how much Valium they have him on.
Oh, dude, you know he is just gacked to the nines. I mean, am I the only one that sees people on television actually sometimes? And you really do wonder seriously if there's a secret. I mean, I guess it's not a secret that there are sort of Dr. Feelgoods, as they used to call them in Hollywood, who would just sort of, you know, whatever you needed. There was a man with a black bag like Dr. Nick, who was Elvis's pal, who just had this traveling pharmacy. What do you need, King? Well, I don't know. I just need some, you know, there you go, a horse tranquilizer. I used to watch O.J., the O.J. trial, and I used to sit there and just wonder how sedated O.J. was. Because clearly O.J., whether one believes he did this or not, O.J. is clearly a man with some impulse control problems. O.J. does not manage his temper very well. And O.J. does seem, I'm just saying now, that he can be easily provoked. And so I remember watching, like, O.J. sitting there in trial. I mean, this is the first round, the criminal trial. Sitting there, 5 feet away from some people, one of whom is a very aggressive woman, who's trying to put him, like, in prison for the rest of his life. Marcia Clark, and we know that O.J. doesn't necessarily interact very well with females while they're breathing. And so Marcia Clark is sitting there 3 feet away, pointing her finger at him, going, and this man is a despicable murderer. And I used to sit there and go, why is he not jumping across the table and just beating her brains out? I mean, that's clearly what he does.
You'd expect at least one outburst.
That's what should happen, but I'm thinking... This is O.J. Clearly, he's a guy that was violent for a living, and then just as a hobby later. And so I'm wondering, like, how is it that that he has not just gone crazy and just gone berserk in the courtroom at some point, like Manson did at that one point. Manson in the Helter Skelter trial, Manson at one point leapt at the judge. He jumped like 8 feet from a crouch position and tried to get the judge, blah, 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 blah. And I used to wonder, like, how is it that O.J. And they must have just had that guy so high every single... He just sat there like, I'm O.J., I do nothing.
Well, it was such a boring trial, listening to Judge Ito sitting at his Sony computer every day.
Seriously.
I mean, it was boring.
We're just looking for mentions of himself on the internet.
Yes.
And then there's that, and then here's the other guy. Anybody know what the other example I'm thinking of? Public figure, probably high as a kite for about 6 months. It's like O.J., sort of. Kind of the same sort of realm. Bill Clinton. I'm saying from 1999, like January through like July, How could Clinton have gotten on television and, like, led the country if he wasn't? I don't know what's scarier, actually, the idea that Clinton was high as a kite during that, and I have no evidence that he was, or that he wasn't. I mean, I would almost prefer that Clinton had been high through that whole thing, because at least maybe then he was thinking, like, rationally and calmly. Because, you know, it's a well-known fact that during the final stages of the Watergate scandal, they effectively disconnected Nixon's first strike capability. There was the Joint Chiefs were instructed to, quote, double-check any, quote, suspicious or unusual requests from the president before acting. In other words, they were
just
afraid
in
that,
case he snapped.
Yeah, that Nixon was going to be like, well, screw you all! Wham! Hits the button. Planet gone. They clearly considered that a possibility, that Nixon, in a fit of pique, was just going to be like, well, I'm going to torch everybody.
Yeah, pretty laid back.
I don't know, man. It's got to be hard to get up on television, and every day Kenneth Starr, that little weaselly mole-like bastard, is just sitting there trying to eat your lunch. You know what I mean? And Clinton is a guy who obviously has a bit of a temper, but he just got up there every day and was just like, I'm just going to keep doing what I do. And it's just, I mean, how can you do that without drugs? I just don't even understand. Well, whatever. Are we in a segment?
We're in the news segment.
I mean, are we in a watch or something?
Well, no, we finished watches.
I'm sorry. I just went into a little zone there, didn't I?
I guess so. Well, we're back from wherever you just took us.
Hello.
We've returned from a little picnic.
I'm on drugs. Let's take a couple of these. Curtis, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Rick, how you doing?
What's up, Curtis?
Well, being cheap and poor, I listen to you all day on one of those tiny little wristband-style AM/FM radios.
Excellent.
Oh, like Dick Tracy.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, total. It's kind of spooky, though, because the next station down the dial, the oldies guys, they bleed through occasionally, and I don't know why, but half the time it seems to coincide with what you're talking about. Last week, you were saying something about the MySpace gig with the men hunting down young girls.
Yeah. Okay, let's... Yeah.
Oh, this is getting creepy.
You just gotta hear this. It's hilarious.
I'm sure, how could it not be?
After you say that, and all I hear is, young girl, get out of my mind. It happens
into my
all
trunk.
Day, every day.
Maybe that's just
every
in
day?
Your head, Curtis.
It very well could be.
Does this happen when you turn the radio off, too? Yeah, does this happen late at night, like when you're just laying in bed as well?
No, just when I'm listening to your shoes and these headphones. I mean, you were talking about the rabbit thing earlier, and I hear the haunting melodies of the sound of silence coming through the radio as I turn my head.
Okay. Well, sorry about that.
It's not your fault. I find it ironic that the radio kind of plays a little background music,
yeah,
you know, on different stations for you.
Yes, yes. And so, well, thanks. Thanks for the call, Curtis. That is very interesting, Kill. I just don't I don't really know how to explain that. I am your God now, and I think that I have no explanation for it.
Yeah, well, tune into the other station occasionally while you're talking about stuff. You'll get a laugh.
Yeah, I'll be sure to do that. I'll get right on
that. You're the only person doing that.
All right. Thanks. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Man, we don't get any of those, and I'm not saying Curtis was this type, but we don't get actually a lot of those, the you're sending out secret messages that only I can hear. When we were working at Fisher, though, we used to, I remember we had some people that showed up in the lobby occasionally because they thought that JJ was sending out, that the morning show there was sending out secret messages to me, like, hey, you know, they were talking to me, they told me to come in, and, you know, poor Jolie, he was at the front, oh, did you win something? No. Well, then, I don't understand, what do you mean they told you to come in? Well, I was listening to the radio, and they told me to come in. Oh, well, why? I don't know, it was during a song, and I just heard George Strait singing my name, and he said that I was supposed to come down to the radio station.
Right.
And then the best part is how the guy then revealed that he began singing along with the song, and as he would sing along with George Strait, his own voice would then start coming out of radios everywhere. He was fantastic. That's a thing you always get in radio, though, the guy who thinks you are sending him messages, and I'm kind of sad that we've never had that. Let's see. Jim, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. How you doing today, buddy?
What's up, Jim?
Hey, the reason I called is you made reference earlier to a Liverpool tour.
Yeah.
Have you been on a Liverpool tour?
I have not.
Okay. Just wondered. I've been to Liverpool. It was, interesting to see the birthplace of the Beatles and all that. But
it was just a way to make a joke about gay sex and methamphetamine as it regards the Reverend Ted Haggard.
Okay, great. Well, that was one of the two reasons I called in.
Okay.
The second one is, you know, when I listen to your show, I feel like you're talking directly, specifically to me and to me only, and I get thoughts about things that I need to do because of what I hear the messages in my head telling me.
Okay.
Thank you, Rick.
All right. And
bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. The time of cleansing and purification is at hand. Go forth and do now. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, plastic surgery is on the rise across this great land. That, according to a recent survey, Dr. Peter Hilger, the president of the American Academy of Plastic Surgeons and Reconstructive Surgery, says this can be attributed to several factors.
Who is this?
A Hilger? Doctor.
First, we have the baby boomer.
First, we have the loudest microphone on earth with overdriven sound.
First, we have the baby boomer aging population, and we're trying to undo some of those changes of time. Second, a lot of our procedures are less invasive, and so you can have minimally invasive things done in the office with little or no downtime, and people find that very attractive. Third, culturally, it's become a very accepted thing.
All right. Yeah, I don't like the idea that things that are normally very invasive can be done uninvasively, because that just implies... Because that's one of those things where, like where Lindsay Lohan had her appendix out, yet somehow there's no scar somewhere. And then that makes you wonder, like, where was the guy shoving his hand that he was able to somehow just get out her appendix without cutting? Well, I'm just saying. Kristen's making the face, but it's like she's all like, I got my appendix out. And then, like, 3 days later, on the beach, two-piece bikini, bam, no scar. And my question is, how does that work exactly? Where, how was the appendix extracted? And how, these are all the things I wonder about. Here's Jim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Alrighty.
Are we reloading Bank A?
We are, yes.
Fantastic. Okay.
Well, we often think of Canadians as genteel people, unable to muster enough hate to harm a bedbug. That's why it's so shocking that there's a Canadian serial killer. Gruesome testimony in the Canadian courtroom this week in the trial of the pig farmer turned murderer.
I bet he's sort of kooky and kind of like bumbling, though, and like wears a funny hat.
He killed 26 prostitutes on the pig farm.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Nothing kooky about
that. Less funny than I had originally thought.
Yes. Allegedly dismembering them in the process.
Oh.
Let's see here. Reporter Jim Goddard with Vancouver News Station, 1130, says testimony reveals Willie Picton may have killed more.
The police officer, I've killed 49, and I wanted to make it an even 50. And when they put out that missing women's poster, they only have shown half of my victims.
Some of the members had to leave court after hearing gruesome details.
Family members in the courtroom burst into tears and ran out when they heard how some of the body parts were found. Three of the women, well, their skulls, neatly sawed in half, were found in buckets or garbage cans on the farm.
They found plenty of evidence on the pig farm.
Jesus, God Almighty.
The theaters found three heads that have been cut neatly down the middle, along with severed hands and feet on the Picton property. The heads hidden in either garbage cans or in plastic pails.
This guy isn't just a serial killer.
Seriously, why is this?
How were these victims identified?
Oh, good.
Two potential victims were identified by jaw bones and teeth. A sixth victim was identified by DNA extracted from their hand bone.
What? A hand bone is an unpleasant word. Why?
Well, they started getting American cable TV up there. They were quiet people before that.
I am
subliminal messages.
You know what this is for? This is the you know what causes this is free health care. I don't understand. Why are we just now hearing about this? This is right up our alley. This show is sort of like...
Well, Canadian news is very seldom mentioned before below the 48-hour.
They put it on stone tablets and float it across an ocean to us. This show is like Serial Killer Central. This is, I mean, that 49 is impressive. I mean, that's almost... I mean,
and he wanted credit for every single one of them.
No, seriously. Yeah.
He demanded it.
He put the time in. I mean, clearly, he worked his plan. He planned his work. And I mean... Good God. And he took
quality as a concern.
See, that's one step too far. That's why would you say that?
Oh, well, they said neatly, so I mean...
Neatly.
It's quality work.
You didn't want to... Well, if you go to the trouble of cutting skulls, you don't want to stack them all higgledy-piggledy. No one has quality control anymore. I mean, it's just unnerving. And the fact that he wanted to make it an even 50...
The theaters found three heads that have been cut neatly down the middle, along with severed hands and feet on the Picton property. The heads hidden in either garbage cans or in plastic pails.
Is this
pails.
A farm? These guys are always on
farms.
It's a
pig farm.
It's a pig. No, because then you start thinking about that whole thing from Hannibal, and it's a. All right, Rick. This email says, "Serial killer. Did he wear a dismembers only jacket?"
Wow.
Here's Tim Riley.
A diver escaped with a... Oh, he escaped a 10-foot shark's attack by poking the animal in the eye. A shark is an animal, apparently. I thought it was a fish. Poked the animal in the eye after it already chomped on his head once and was preparing to chomp on it again. Eric Nurhus was flown to the hospital with serious injuries to his head, body, and upper arm after the attack off of Cape Howe, which is in Australia. The shark grabbed the man by the head, crushing his face mask and breaking his nose. He was actually bitten... Oh... He was actually bitten by the head down. The shark swallowed his head.
This is another one of those stories you haven't pre-read, isn't it?
Right, it's from Australia. Yeah. It's a foreign country.
Yes.
So, the shark bit him in the head.
Yeah.
Swallowed his head. So he had to do something for him to spit his head back out. The shark is believed to be a great white. He came back for a second bite, clenching its jaw around the man's torso and leaving deep lacerations in his side.
Now, see, because of watching the Discovery Channel, though, I like all guys. Here's guys, and I do think I can speak for most men here. There's all kinds of skills and abilities and tactical knowledge that guys think they have simply because they've watched a lot of television growing up. All guys, and it's always like myself, it's always like some like suburban white guy, we all think that we know how to survive in a maximum security prison because we've watch endless episodes of Oz. We all believe that we know how the mafia operates because we've seen The Godfather 1,000 times, and we all think that we know how to get rid of sharks and alligators. With sharks, it's all about the thumb right into the eye socket. Is that what the guy did?
Yep.
That's what I'm saying. Thumb into the eye socket, that's how the shark lets you go. Or the blunt hit on the tip of the nose. And of course, with alligators, it's running in a zigzag fashion.
How can you do that if you're swimming?
I don't know. Let's do one more and then we'll break.
A man has been arrested trying to smuggle 500 parrots in his car into Uzbekistan. 45 cargo of 500 parrots in his car, said the official news agency KNB. It's unclear how the parrots fit into the Kazakh man's Audi. Trade of foreign parrots is banned around the world, and especially in Uzbekistan.
Scotty, I'm sorry. I mean, Aaron is incensed that we did not use the serial killer opening close, the serial killer watch.
I didn't know that we had one.
No, well, because we used it once, and we determined that the serial killer watch was it was just too much. It was just too... Even for this program, and that really is saying something. I think we determined that the serial... Let's see if I can... Just a little bit of... I think we determined that it was just one shade over the line, even for this admittedly vile radio program. Do we have more sound?
About what?
For the news, are we done with the sound?
I believe we are, yes.
All right, fantastic. Well, let's take a break here. We'll come back with CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop. Later on, Scotty J will be here with the Suburban Perspective. We'll do the top five. And we have Dennis Pitsenbarger from The Fuel Show. You say that's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970. Solid State Radio.